You're listening to ReachMD XM160, the channel for medical professionals. Welcome to ADHD Across the Lifespan, produced in cooperation with APSARD, the American Professional Society of ADHD and Related Disorders, and sponsored by Concerta, a product of McNeil Pediatrics, division of Ortho McNeil Janssen Pharmaceuticals, Incorporated. Your host is Dr. Leonard Adler, director of the Adult ADHD Program and professor of psychiatry and child and adolescent psychiatry at the NYU School of Medicine.
Patients with ADHD are commonly diagnosed with other concurrent psychiatric disorders. What are some of the other comorbid conditions, and how can coexisting conditions be appropriately managed? Joining us to discuss ADHD and comorbid psychiatric disorders is Dr. Mark Stein, founder of the Hyperactivity Attention and Learning Problems Clinic at the Institute for Juvenile Research at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Dr. Stein is also professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Pediatrics at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Welcome, Dr. Stein.
Hello.
So, I wanted to start off by asking a question about prevalence. How common is comorbidity in children and adults with ADHD? And does the comorbidity differ by age?
Well, I think the answer we know is that comorbidity is very common, especially in children that are referred for treatment for ADHD. And it's also common when you look at children that have ADHD that aren't treated, which raises some interesting questions. The majority of children that we do see have more than one problem. And the estimates of what we call ADHD simplex, which are individuals that just have ADHD, it's usually about 30% in clinic populations, maybe a little bit higher in non-referred populations. But what that means is that 70% of the time, people will have more than one psychiatric disorder. Now, in adults, the comorbidity estimates are also very high, and the types of comorbidity may differ somewhat between children and adults, but in both populations, they're very high.
So I know that in adults, the samples that are referred into clinics have been compared to the epidemiologic community-based samples, and surprisingly, the comorbidities have been rather similar. Has that been the case for children also? Referred versus community-based samples.
Yes, they're high in both clinic-referred and community-referred. And so it raises the question, is it true comorbidity, or is this somehow an artifact of our classification systems? And I think that we're really not sure. But I think for the clinician, I think the message is when someone comes in and you're suspicious of ADHD, you should also have a high degree of suspicion of some other psychiatric disorder that may coexist.
Right. And similarly, if the patient is presenting with another common psychiatric disorder, you want to look for ADHD because we know that that type of reverse comorbidity is rather common also.
Right. I think the issue of reverse comorbidity is an important one, and it's important, especially in terms of looking at the differences between adults and kids. I think, in general, people that treat children know that ADHD is one of the most common psychiatric disorders, and so they look for it. On the other hand, people that treat adults may not have that same orientation that ADHD is a common disorder. And certainly, you know, Dr. Adler, you know, some of your work in terms of looking at psychiatric residencies and how much emphasis there is on adult ADHD suggests that many adult practitioners don't know as much as they should about how common ADHD is.
Certainly that's true for practicing general psychiatrists, but also we've done surveys of primary care physicians and found similar findings, that they're much more comfortable with other mental health disorders as compared to ADHD. Getting back to comorbidity in kids, what are the most common types of comorbidities that you see in children, and how do you assess them?
In terms of comorbidities, the most common comorbidities are really learning and behavior problems. Depending on which measure you use, the rates are generally 30 to 40% of children with ADHD will have a comorbid learning disorder or a comorbid behavior disorder. We know the most about the comorbid behavior disorders. And when I say behavior disorders, what I'm referring to are children with oppositional defiant disorder or conduct disorder. And oppositional defiant disorder is more common than conduct disorder, but together, they're one of the most common constellations of symptoms, if you will, in terms of someone that has ADHD and ODD or conduct disorder symptoms. The way we assess it, it's similar to the way we assess ADHD in terms of it's usually by history, sometimes supplemented by use of rating scales. What we've learned is for behavior disorders, using interviews and rating scales are very reliable. These are symptoms that are very obvious to parents and to teachers. So they're very easy to elicit those symptoms. I mean, everyone knows if someone is lying or stealing or, you know, in trouble with the police, their behavior has led to multiple problems in multiple settings. So that's fairly easy to assess. Learning problems, comorbid learning problems, are a little bit more difficult to elicit, especially from history. I mean, you may develop ideas that someone might have a learning disorder, but sometimes children might have a more subtle learning disability that may not be obvious. It could be a global problem, like, you know, for example, borderline intelligence, or it could be a very specific problem like a reading disability or developmental coordination disorder, which occurs in about a third of kids with ADHD. And it's really important to identify developmental coordination disorder in particular, because children that have ADHD that are clumsy, first of all, they're at risk for academic underachievement and increased frustration. But the other important thing is that many of the difficulties can be prevented by identifying this as a problem. What I mean by being prevented is noting someone has developmental coordination disorder, they can receive accommodations. So when they're younger and they're in the cutting and pasting years, rather than really emphasizing frustrating penmanship, they should be given accommodations and given alternative mechanisms of expressing themselves. And then when they're older, learning things like a computer. In general, learning and behavior problems are very common. Anyone that's evaluated for ADHD in the pediatric age range should be screened for learning and behavior problems.
I wanted to note that if you're just tuning in, you're listening to ADHD Across the Lifespan on ReachMD Radio on XM160, the channel for medical professionals. I'm your host, Dr. Leonard Adler, and joining us to discuss ADHD and comorbid psychiatric disorders is Dr. Mark Stein, professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Pediatrics at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Picking up on our discussion about adults, it's not just that the adults have these symptoms, which they do, but certainly the National Comorbidity Survey has found that adults who are in the community have these symptoms also. So it's not just in referred samples. And there are a couple of things, I think, that make the adult situation somewhat different than for childhood, in that some of the comorbid disorders are a bit more differentiated. The anxiety disorders tend to be more differentiated into whether they're generalized anxiety or OCD or panic. And in addition, we have the benefit of a longitudinal observation for adults over the course of time. When making the differential between ADHD and another disorder, the timing factor becomes important. And I wondered if you wanted to talk about that.
What often you see is a difference in the course in terms of differential diagnosis. We often see ADHD as having a chronic course and then mood symptoms being more intermittent. And that's often a clue in terms of differential diagnosis. But I guess what I've been impressed by is the difference in terms of the adults that I see. Many of them have had their mood, this is the reverse comorbidity, they've had their mood or anxiety disorder diagnosed previously and the ADHD has been missed, at least at first. And then later come to realize that maybe this is a missing piece, and then they try to get treatment for their ADHD as well as their mood or anxiety symptoms. What's interesting to me is the difference between adults and kids. At least I see far fewer adults with disruptive behavior disorders. Now, part of it is that that's not a diagnosis that we use in adults. But I also think that there's a ascertainment or referral bias. In children, they're usually not self-referred. They're referred because someone around them has realized that there's a problem. And it's usually a parent or a teacher. And it's often the disruptive behavior that is the problem for the parent or the teacher that leads to the referral. In an adult, and certainly in teenagers, it's really the patient themselves that's asking for help. And for them, the mood and anxiety symptoms or the internalizing symptoms often drive the referral. So I think that's part of the difference.
I think also there are differences in what brings people into the office in terms of disruption. If the consequences of disruption build over the course of a lifetime for an adult, and there are other consequences to that that may bring them to attention in other systems, be it that they've had problems with the law or a variety of other things, whereas the ADHD may not be the driving factor there and that they're being seen in another setting or system. One thing commonly asked about by clinicians is, you know, what do you treat first? If I go ahead and I find that a patient has, let's say, a mood disorder and they have ADHD, where do I start?
This is a common dilemma, and unfortunately, there is not that much research to guide us. There have been a number of studies that talk about the prevalence of comorbidity in children and adults in clinic and community samples. But the real question is, how does comorbidity affect treatment? And then the next question, which you just brought up, is what do you treat first? Now, what the research suggests is that if you have comorbidity, the more problems you have in general, the worse the prognosis and the more likely problems are to continue. So when you have someone that has ADHD and other comorbid disorders, I mean, that's a group that you're going to really need to closely monitor, and they're going to need your more aggressive treatment. Now, the question of what to treat first, let me just touch on that in terms of breaking it down in terms of adults and kids. In kids, and we're just talking about, you know, generalities because every case is different, but I guess my logic would be to treat where I think I can be most effective. But you want to also consider what is most impairing for the individual. Now, in children, we have a lot of data on treating ADHD with medication, especially with the stimulant medications. And the statistic that we use to evaluate the efficacy is called an effect size. And we have very high effect sizes for stimulant medication for treatment. So because of that, we often recommend medication treatment for ADHD in children, regardless of the comorbidity, because this is what we know the most about and we have a lot of data on. Now, when you have a case, though, where someone has ADHD, but they have another psychiatric disorder, such as major depression with suicide, obviously you're not going to treat the ADHD first. You're going to want to treat, you know, the more severe mood disorder. But that's the minority of cases. The more common presentation is a child that has ADHD and a disruptive behavior disorder. In that case, you're going to want to treat the ADHD with medication, but medication isn't going to be sufficient. You're going to want to add other types of treatment, particularly psychosocial treatments. In adults, there are a couple of things to consider in terms of what treatment to use first. And when you're thinking about medication treatments, again, you want to think of what you think is the main problem that's resulting in the most impairment. Also, you want to have a plan for how to evaluate their response to treatment. And many adults that we see in our adult ADD clinic have already been treated for depression or are currently being treated for depression, and that's a matter of adding an ADHD treatment. But when you have a patient that's, you know, not on any medications, I think the decision as to what treatment to use first, one of the things to consider is the time frame, your relationship with the patient in terms of how closely you can monitor them. But in general, we don't know that much about how to sequence these treatments for individuals.
No, I think that you mentioned that treating the most impairing disorder first, and I think that that's a good clinical dictum throughout medicine when two or more conditions are present. So, I'd like to thank my guest from the University of Illinois, Chicago, Dr. Mark Stein. Dr. Stein, thank you very much for being our guest this week on ADHD Across the Lifespan.
Always a pleasure.
You've been listening to ADHD Across the Lifespan on ReachMD XM160, the channel for medical professionals. ADHD Across the Lifespan is produced in cooperation with APSARD, the American Professional Society of ADHD and Related Disorders, and sponsored by Concerta, a product of McNeil Pediatrics, division of Ortho McNeil Janssen Pharmaceuticals, Incorporated. For more information about this or any other show, please visit ReachMD.com, now featuring on-demand podcasts.
It's 9 a.m., and John's ADHD is already causing problems at home. Work doesn't go much better. Once daily Concerta, methylphenidate hydrochloride, is a step in the right direction for patients like John who need ADHD symptom improvement with a proven tolerability profile. Concerta offers smooth delivery of medication throughout the day, and its compromise-resistant formulation may help discourage abuse. Abuse of methylphenidate may lead to dependence. Concerta is a Schedule II controlled substance. Concerta is already the number one ADHD medication prescribed for children and adolescents. Discover the benefits it can bring to adult patients with ADHD. Visit www.concerta360.com to find out more today and get online tools for diagnosing ADHD in adults. Concerta is indicated for the treatment of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. Important safety information. Concerta should not be taken by patients with allergies to methylphenidate or other ingredients in Concerta, significant anxiety, tension, or agitation, glaucoma, Tourette's syndrome, tics, or family history of Tourette's syndrome,
current or recent use of monoamine oxidase inhibitors, MAOIs. Children under 6 years of age should not take Concerta. Abuse of methylphenidate may lead to dependence. Concerta should not be used in patients with known structural cardiac abnormalities, cardiomyopathy, serious heart rhythm abnormalities, coronary artery disease, other serious cardiac problems, or patients with pre-existing severe gastrointestinal narrowing. Use with caution in patients with hypertension and other cardiovascular conditions, psychosis, bipolar disorder, and history of seizures, EEG abnormalities. Stimulants may cause new psychotic or manic symptoms. Discontinuation of treatment may be appropriate. Aggressive behavior or hostility should be monitored in patients beginning ADHD treatment. Methylphenidate may produce difficulties with visual accommodation and blurring of vision. Hematologic monitoring is advised during prolonged therapy. Growth should be monitored during treatment with stimulants, and patients who are not growing or gaining height or weight as expected may need to have their treatment interrupted. The most common adverse reaction, greater than 5%, reported in children and adolescents was abdominal pain upper. The most common adverse reactions, greater than 10%, reported in adults were dry mouth, nausea, decreased appetite, headache, and insomnia. Concerta. Start here, get there.